Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back as the cold continues to grip not just Colorado, here as we are ensconced a mile high above all you people, looking down upon you, but it's also braced the Midwest, and everybody else. And we can thank God for saving Chicago, because the cold weather and the freezing drizzle kept the Black Lives Matter types off the streets for the most part. They were only able to disrupt Black Friday shopping, which is one of the few things they've ever done that I frankly agree with. Black Friday shopping. Never been a big fan. I've never participated. Have you? He asked. He's extremely attractive. Audio engineer. No? Never have? You've never busted through that Walmart door at 4 a.m.?
I got stumped on.
Get run over by extremely large people in a hurry to get a flat screen? Anyway, so thank you, Lord, for saving Chicago from riots with the freezing rain. I'm going to get to that video, by the way, the Laquan. What's the kid's name? Let's see here. Let me flip through here. The Laquan. Was that his name? Laquan? Laquan McDonald. We'll get to that. I got some comments on that. I got something to say about that, as you can well imagine. But first, we wanted to thank the Lord for saving Chicago from what could have been a disastrous Thanksgiving weekend. Let's see here. We've got the shooter down in Colorado Springs at the Planned Parenthood. So I pick up my phone around lunchtime on Friday, and there's an email from a board member of a prominent Right to Life group. Email comes in on my phone. It just says there is an active shooter at the Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs. And my immediate what? My immediate response was to, why do you laugh? That's typically not a laugh line.
Making sure it's not you.
Yeah, that's probably her first goal was to make sure that I was receiving emails. Hadn't thought of that. But that could be. She's checking on all her friends. But my immediate response to the email, active shooter at Planned Parenthood, I replied, is there any other kind of shooter but an active shooter? I mean, by definition, right? Anyway, that was my initial response. Forgive me for not feigning concern for the lives of the people in the Planned Parenthood, because I did, but that was later. Later I was concerned because I heard this guy had shot some police, and that's when I frankly knew that when this all comes out in the wash, it's going to be obvious that no one associated with any pro-life organization anywhere has ever met this guy, ever knew this guy. And he has nothing to do with any of us. Do I have anything on this guy? I really don't, because we don't know much about the guy except he lived in the woods and he didn't have electricity and he registered to vote as a female, but not because he's some kind of deranged sex pervert. He's just deranged and he's hiding out from the government, and he figured that, I think he figured registering as a female would throw off the CIA and they wouldn't be able to get their drones over his house or something. Anyway, just a nut job. But so there's the active shooter. Let's see. What else interesting in life besides the news? Oh, yes, I saved the Spanish language church who rents from a Denver Bible Church. I saved them from a very cold morning by, in one fell swoop, repairing the radiator. Not the radiator. What do they call it? The central heat. I repaired the central heat at Denver Bible Church this morning after we shivered through a very brutally cold service with the youngsters out in the fellowship hall this morning. But thankfully, I and another member of the church were on the scene. We diagnosed the problem, and I fixed it. And there's nothing that makes a man feel better than to fix a piece of equipment in front of a large room full of women. So it was very, very satisfying. My extremely attractive audio engineer was very impressed. So the Spanish language folks there, wonderful group. They rent the building after we vacate. And they're just a great bunch of folks. And the pastor was, I took him into the room and I showed him what the problem was. I said, if this ever happens again, here's what to do. And he said, man, we were freezing last week. Anyway, it's that poor guy. Anyway, but let's move on into the news. Because I know you people don't want to hear about my boring life. Let's talk. We'll start with something uplifting. And we go to Queens, believe it or not, for something uplifting. A newborn baby, this is according to the New York Daily News. A newborn baby boy was abandoned in a church nativity scene. Now, that's not very uplifting. But wait, okay, hang on. This newborn baby boy was, was found in the church's nativity creche. That's the manger where Jesus would lay. They found a live baby, newborn, umbilical cord still attached. The Father Christopher there at the church. What is the name of the church here? The Holy Child Jesus Church, ironically, is the name of the church. And Father Christopher says God works in mysterious ways. The child's mother must have been in a difficult place in her life. She found the creche, this empty place where Jesus will be in just a few weeks, as a home for her son. And Father Christopher's probably a nice enough guy, but he's being a little too generous with a mother who abandoned her child, which should never be. I guess you could understand it, you could relate to it, but anyway, you'd think there'd be just a little bit of rebuke. But no, I guess that's, we can't expect anyone to rebuke anyone for anything anymore ever. Because it's just it's a microaggression, I think, now for a priest to say anything about anyone that could be viewed as negative in any way. But anyway, we're glad the mother didn't kill her child, right? Is that how far our civilization has fallen? We're just thankful she didn't kill the child. Now, she did dump the child in a public place, which should be frowned upon. But anyway, the uplifting part of the story is that at least one parishioner at Holy Child Jesus Church has already offered to adopt the baby. The baby, by the way, earned the nickname Baby Jesus, as you can well imagine, because the baby was found in the manger. Yes, so they nicknamed it Baby Jesus. Yes. Oh, wait a minute. This is Queens. Perhaps that's Baby Jesus. Perhaps. Either way, a very uplifting story. It's, you know, the people who say that there are just too many children and there's all these abandoned and unwanted children. When a baby's born and found in a situation like this, people line up to adopt the baby. So abortion is never a solution to an unwanted pregnancy, because if you can just hang on for 9 months, Mom, people will literally line up to adopt your baby. All right, and we should work harder at getting the word out about that truth. Now, let's go from there. That was an uplifting story. Now, this is a horrifying, just horrible, horrible story. And it comes to us via the Sad Religion File from WorldNet Daily. Pastor David Blackburn is the pastor at Resonate Church. And his wife was murdered a couple weeks ago. We've all heard the story if you pay attention to the news at all. Pastor David Blackburn, the killers of his wife, the alleged killers, have been arrested. And WorldNet Daily reports that Pastor Davey Blackburn had a surprising offer for the alleged killers of his pregnant wife, Amanda. What was the surprising offer? He's forgiving them. He's offered forgiveness to the killers. I mean, before they were even arraigned, he had already forgiven them. And I want to ask the author at WorldNet Daily, what's surprising about a mainline evangelical church pastor forgiving people before the body's even cold and before anybody has repented of anything? There's nothing surprising about that. apparently this young pastor posted on his Facebook page. He said, quote, "Though everything inside of me wants to hate, be angry, and slip into despair, I choose the route of forgiveness, grace, and hope. Today I'm deciding to love, not to hate." I don't know if this young pastor's ever actually read the Bible. He probably went to seminary where he was segregated from the Bible for the most part. But the Bible actually says there's a time for love and a time for hate. And the time to hate someone is when they've just murdered your pregnant wife. God's okay with you hating them at that time. In fact, if it were up to God and they were convicted, he would be okay with you killing them with your own hands, Pastor. Now, I know he's been through a horrible experience. I understand. But I'm sorry. It's just, you make repentance superfluous. Pastor Davey, if you ever want these murderers to repent of their crimes, you first have to rebuke them so that they'll know they need to repent. And then they might find Jesus. They might. But if you forgive them before they've even been arraigned, you make it difficult for them to understand that they need forgiveness. And that's the last thing a pastor should be involved in, is making it more difficult for someone to come to the place in their life where they realize they're a hopeless sinner, guilty of death and deserving of death, and that they need the forgiveness of the Son of God. I've got some other pastors, as you can imagine, are commenting on Pastor Davey's forgiveness of these unrepentant murderers. Carl Gallups is the unqualified pastor of Hickory Hammock Baptist Church. He says, the Word of God commands believers in Jesus Christ to, quote, "love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." And he says this is very difficult, but Pastor Davey is exemplifying this teaching. To which I say to unqualified pastor Carl Gallups over at Hickory Hammock Baptist Church, Pastor Carl, that verse doesn't say forgive. It does, and it certainly doesn't imply that you forgive the unrepentant. It says love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Sometimes loving someone means you rebuke them to try to help them get their act together and get right with God. A lot of times it's a very uncomfortable thing. But I doubt Pastor Carl Gallup over at Hickory Hammock has ever made anyone uncomfortable. Yeah, he says, Pastor Davey's making the difficult choice of obedience. Pastor Blackburn is doing what a true man of God must do. His powerful example may very well result in the salvation and life transformation of others. Really, how? How about saying you murdered my wife, you should die, you're guilty. You're guilty before man and God. And then start that from there. And by the way, I hate you for it. I'm very angry with you and I hate you right now. Anyway, as the words cross the pastor's lips, praising Davey, saying he's doing something so difficult and what we must do, it's as if he knows intuitively that he's advising you to do something unbiblical. Because it really doesn't make any sense to forgive people who haven't repented. It doesn't make any sense to anyone, but most mainline evangelicals seem to think that it's the high road. It's what God would have us do. Even though if you read the whole Bible, that's nowhere in there anywhere, ever, not once. But most mainline evangelical pastors have been segregated from the scriptures, from seminary right on through to whatever they do at mainline evangelical churches, which I am somewhat familiar. And it's a sad state. Let me just put it that way. All right. So you just wouldn't expect that from someone who supposedly understands the Word of God. You just wouldn't expect it. Or maybe if you go to a mainline evangelical church, maybe you do expect that. We do need to come back. As much as we would like to let Stevie Ray play a dirge for the state of the modern evangelical church, we will come back. Because we go from something you might not expect from someone you would expect to understand the Bible to something you would expect from someone who you know does not understand the Bible. And for that, we go to one Tracy Morgan. Now, I'll have to explain to you people who this guy is, because you may not know. He is a former Saturday Night Live star. A star, I said. Yes, his name is Tracy Morgan, and he used to be on Saturday Night Live back when I used to watch it upon occasion. We're off Saturday Night Live at the McBurney compound for a number of years now because it became so sexually degenerate that, I mean, it just, it's not watchable, in my opinion. That's all. But Tracy Morgan used to be on there, and you may know Tracy Morgan more. He may be more famous for the near-fatal auto accident that he was involved in when his limousine was run over by a semi-truck. Well, he gave a... Okay. Tracy Morgan says that God spoke to him after his near-fatal automobile accident back in 2014. Tracy Morgan says, quote, "I went to the other side, and now that's something I'm not making up. And do you want to know what God said to me? He said, your room ain't ready. I still got something for you to do. And here I am doing an interview with you." Unquote. Tracy Morgan said as he was doing an interview with Complex Magazine. Apparently that was God's big plan for Tracy. Got to the pearly gates and God said, well, wait a minute. There's that interview with Complex he's got to do. We better get him back. Anyway, Tracy Morgan. So Tracy Morgan experiences a near-fatal injury and claims that he goes to the other side and sees God. And, what is Tracy's great philosophical revelation to the world that he has returned from the other side with? Everyone's on the edge of their seat. Tracy says, quote, "When the sun's up, I try to get it on and popping. When the sun is up, I try to make it happen. That's what I'm doing. Whatever it is, I'm going to do it till I'm satisfied." Unquote. Tracy, come over here, buddy. Come here, man. If God spoke to you on the other side, Tracy, I'm sure the first thing he would have asked you is, why do you mock my son who gave his life for you? That's what God would have asked Tracy Morgan on the other side. And Tracy Morgan would be singing a different tune. He wouldn't be talking about popping and doing it till I'm satisfied. Tracy Morgan would be a changed man. Proving once again that nobody has ever gone to the other side and come back. Except one guy. One man, Jesus Christ. And anyone else who says they ever did, well, they just had a severe blood loss. They're in shock for crying out loud. Anyway. So we doubt Tracy Morgan's, the veracity of his encounter with the Almighty. And we look at his great revelation that he comes to us with, and we understand that Tracy Morgan is not only without talent, but he's also on his way straight to hell with Jet Rockets. Not to put too fine a point on it. All right, now we move to sporting news of sorts. The New York Daily News is reporting that one Olivia Culpo, who is a supermodel, has broken up with Tim Tebow. Apparently, Tim Tebow was dating Olivia Culpo, and she dumped him after a two-month relationship, according to the Daily News, because he would not have sex with her. So you got to ask this airhead, this Olivia Culpo, this model, how do you go out with Tim Tebow and then not understand that he's not going to have sex with you? That's one thing. Secondly, to Mr. Tebow, why are you going out with slutty supermodels who expect you to have sex with that? It's just bizarre to me. Maybe the story is all made up. Is that possible? I think it's possible. Let's see here. She's a former Miss USA and apparently a relatively low-rent slut, and she was reported to have been seeing Tebow starting back in October. The Daily News is reporting that Copo, maybe she was hoping to have a romantic revelation like she did for Nick Jonas. Do you guys remember the Jonas Brothers? Do you remember the Jonas Brothers? They were sort of Christians, I think, early on. Yeah.
What sort of Christians?
Well, that they sold a lot of records to Christians kind of acting like they were Christians. Yeah, they were evangelicals, no doubt about it. Okay. Products of the modern youth group, the Jonas Brothers. Anyway, one of these Jonas Brothers, Nick Jonas, was going out with this slut back in 2012. Hey, he was wearing a promise ring, which meant that he's saving himself for marriage, right? That's what the promise ring, that's what they wear at the youth group, to show other people that they're not going to deflower themselves or each other before marriage. Okay. Well, he started dating this slut, Olivia Culpo, in the summer of 2013, and within about a year, his promise ring disappeared. And he admitted that, yeah, he had given in to this slut.
Oh, so she's a Satan.
So she's the devil's daughter, so to speak. Yeah. So she deflowered one of the Jonas Brothers, and perhaps she thought she could do the same thing with Tebow. Oh, I got to tell you what the Jonas Brother says about giving in to lust with this slut. He says, this is what Nick Jonas said when he admitted that he had... He says, this is a real growth in me and not something I'm doing anymore. But I've got my set of values, things that are important to me now at this point in my life, and that's all that matters, he said, after being deflowered by the devil's daughter there. So he was thoroughly confused. He says, this is a real growth in me. He should probably go get that checked out. He might need a penicillin shot or something. Anyway, yeah. Let's see, do I have anything more on this story? Tebow split up with another supermodel named Camilla Bell after only 2 months. And it was widely speculated at the time that the Disney Channel star was bothered by Tebow's chastity. How can you be bothered by chastity, for crying out loud? What are you, some kind of just a complete sex maniac, for crying out loud? All right. What's up with Tebow going out with these type of women? You know what, though? I think it's got to be very difficult by the time you're in your 20s, 25, to find another person who's not just a complete basket case and just utterly confused and corrupted and all of that. It's got to be very difficult. You know, Tim Tebow's parents should have paid better attention and tried to get him married off by the time he was about 18, for crying out loud. Poor guy. All right. So we move on. By the way, the Dallas Cowboys, neither the Dallas Cowboys nor the Philadelphia Eagles called Tim Tebow this week, even though it was obvious to everyone that both teams should have been going after him. But there you have that. All right. Now, let's move from there right on into the politics file where Hillary Clinton has reared her ugly head again because Hillary sent out a tweet. Let's see, when was this? I'm not a big Twitter fan. Hillary's not on my Twitter feed, believe it or not. So I didn't actually see this live. But apparently, Clinton sent out a tweet regarding women who claim that they have been sexually assaulted. Hillary tweeted, "You have the right to be heard. You have the right to be believed. We're with you." She said, oh, this was in a video, not just a tweet. She made a video. Can you believe this woman? She makes a video which was addressed to every survivor of sexual assault, of which Hillary Clinton knows at least half a dozen personally. Anyway, Juanita Broderick, who you may or may not remember, Juanita accused Bill Clinton of rape, and the New York Times wrote the story up, and it was a fairly convincing story that Ms. Broderick told about Bill Clinton actually raping her, and then the years and years of torment that Hillary put her and other women who were assaulted by Bill through. Juanita Broderick responded. She said, "I think Bill and Hillary have this evil compact between the two of them. and that they each know what the other does, and they overlook it. And they go right on, and they cover up for one another, which is absolutely true. She said, Juanita Broderick said, I hope someday these two people that I feel are so evil will be brought to justice. And I agree with Ms. Broderick. But, hey, this is a lesson to all you young girls out there. If you want to intern somewhere, don't do it in a Democrat campaign, for crying out loud. I mean, you're just putting yourself out there in the danger zone. And it's been well known since 1978 when Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick. 1978. Yeah. All right. Now, more from the politics file. We move from Clinton to Obama, which is somewhat appropriate as we're sliding down toward the rim of hell. Obama gave a Thanksgiving address that I must address. This is from the politics file. Obama, in his Thanksgiving address, he compared the Syrian refugees to the pilgrims. Here's what Barry said. Quote, in 1620, a small band of pilgrims came to the continent, refugees who had fled persecution and violence in their native land. Nearly 400 years later, we remember their part in the American story, and we honor the men and women who helped them in their time of need. Nearly four centuries after the Mayflower set sail, the world is still full of pilgrims, men and women who want nothing more than the chance for a safer, better future for themselves and their families. What makes America, America, is that we offer that chance. That's Barack Obama wanting to shame the rest of us who are scared that terrorists may be ferreting themselves away inside the hordes of refugees that are invading Europe and no doubt making their way north from Latin America and possibly south from Canada as well. He wants to shame us all. But we need to remind Barry that after the pilgrims got here, they did not allow the Barbary pirates to hide out amongst the next wave of pilgrims. And there was just no chance of that happening. Anyway, we no longer have George Washington and John Adams and the Founding Fathers to be sensible about things. Did you know that Thomas Jefferson went to war against the Barbary pirates, who were Muslim, by the way? Yeah. But what does Barry have to say about football? I'm sorry. Thanksgiving, which he confused. See, I even got it confused there just looking at the story. Barry said this about Thanksgiving, quote, Thanksgiving is a day for food and football and for hoping the turkey didn't turn out too dry, but it's also a day to count our blessings and give back to others. And at which point I was like, well, what about Thanksgiving? What about giving thanks? Is it? It's not about that. It's about food, football, turkey, counting our blessings. What about giving thanks? Maybe it's not about that anymore. According to Breitbart, the only mention of God in Barry's Thanksgiving address was a reference to all of Allah's children being worthy of compassion and care. I'm sorry, did I say Allah? I meant God's children. Barry said all of God's children are worthy of compassion and care. He also reminded Americans not just to participate in Black Friday or Cyber Monday, but what he described as Giving Tuesday. That's the new one to shame all of you people who enjoyed your turkey dinner and bought something, got a great deal over the weekend. Just to shame you, he says, what you really need to do is get involved in Giving Tuesday. He says, together, may we all play our own small part in the American story and write a next chapter that future generations can be thankful for. To which everybody looked at him and said, Barry, thankful? Thankful to who? First things first, we're gonna change the rules. Better listen up, all you boys and girls. Your prayer says there'll be no after school. So vote for me, now wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, 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 yeah. And now I know there's trouble in the Middle East. I span on my money when I stop the arms race. All my brothers in the desert gonna have them for the feast. When that's gone, then we'll start a world peace. So, It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you to Nuno Betancourt and the boys for that. Back when guitar solos were, well, just impressive at least. All right. So we move on from, where were we? Us. We move from Barack Obama to Barack Obama. Okay. Not, we don't want to give him too much airtime, but we've got to address what must be addressed. This is from the War File. A story appeared on the Breitbart website this past week titled Gaia Beats Mars, How Our Military Are Being Turned Into Green Eco Wussies. Well, that was the headline. And the reporter states that the Islamic State earns about $500 million a year from its oil revenue. But according to former CIA Director Mike Morrell, U.S. fighter aircraft have been ordered not to bomb their oil wells because it could cause environmental damage. And that's where I stopped reading this article. Because, well, I mean, I read the rest of it, but that's where I'm going to stop for now. Because this reporter, this well-intentioned reporter over at Breitbart, goes on for 10 or 12 paragraphs making fun of the fact that our eco-green wussy president will not bomb the Islamic State's oil wells nor their oil convoys because allegedly it could cause environmental damage. And to our good Breitbart reporter, I say, I can't believe you're buying this, okay? Because I'm not buying it. Barack Obama is not bombing the Islamic State for some other reason other than ecological damage. I'm sorry. And I don't believe anything that former CIA Director Mike Morrell has to say. I'm sorry. I should have looked up who this Mike Morrell served under. But he's either misinformed, misled, or just naive. Because first of all, Islamic State, if they're making $500 million a year from oil revenues, who's buying this oil? Has anybody stopped to ask the question, where are the maniac head cutters at Islamic State? Where are they selling their oil? Who would buy oil from these people, from these subhuman demonic maniacs? Well, I think it's a legitimate question. Who's buying the oil and why is it not being destroyed? Well, oil's very valuable. It's extremely valuable. And I'll bet you that the Islamic State is selling their oil at quite a discount. Now, who's buying it? I think this environmental damage story, I think this is a cover. Intentional or unintentional, it's just a cover. Who's buying ISIS's oil? Who's profiting from the theft of the oil fields of Iraq and Syria? Some say it's Turkey. It could be any of the pagan dictatorships over there ruled by members of the Muslim Brotherhood, in my opinion. Yeah. So why did Barry Obama not bomb their oil fields or their oil convoys until Russia did? Russia claims they blew up 500 oil trucks in an afternoon. Now, we know that the Russians, they probably are probably exaggerating a little bit, but let's say they blew 200 or 300 of them up. And that forced Barry's hand. He had to bomb some of them just so it wouldn't be so obvious that he wasn't bombing them. I mean, if the Russians can find these convoys and just wipe them out in wholesale fashion, why is it that the world's most impressive military couldn't find these convoys? Why did Barry choose not to bomb? Is it ideological reasons? Is it environmental reasons? I doubt it. Is it ideological reasons? I don't think so. Could it be financial? Could it be that Barry or someone Barry is friendly with is benefiting financially from the... Hey, Barry was running guns into Syria from Benghazi. That's been proven. Who's to say Barry's not getting a cut of that or Barry's friends aren't getting a cut of that? I mean, I have always believed that Barack Obama is an ideologically driven tyrant. But I could be proven wrong. It could be that he's just a common thief and a criminal. You know, it's going to be amazing on Judgment Day when we all sit around and we look at the leaders of the world and the great crises and the human tragedies and the wars And I'll bet you more than 80% of the time it's going to come down to somebody stealing something from other people. It's going to come down to common thievery. It's not going to be as ideological as we thought. It's not going to be the underlying factors are not going to be nearly as grandiose as we all thought. We're going to find out that mostly it was about stealing and pillaging and raping and all of that. That's what we're going to find out. Most of the trouble in the world throughout human history, the root of it is going to be just common thieves, thugs, and criminals who happen to get into power. Anyway, I guess we'll find out on Judgment Day, right? Are you going to be there? I plan to be there. Yep. I intend to have a front row seat. All right. Now, this next story, I have no idea why it's in my stack of stories here. It comes from the War File. It's from Fox News. They're reporting that up in West Point, New York, the U.S. Military Academy is banning pillow fights. So I didn't know they had pillow fights. Why are they having pillow fights at West Point? That's my first question. That strikes me as odd. Is this part of military training? Learn how to strike another man with a pillow? The Fox News story reads the following. First-year students at the military academy organize an annual pillow fight as a way to build camaraderie. But back on August 20th, the pillow fight led to a broken nose and at least 24 diagnosed concussions. And the superintendent at West Point is very upset. He says this is an unsanctioned event. It has no place in the future at the United States Military Academy. They're going to take administrative action against both groups. So what I was hoping, ladies and gentlemen, was that as I read this story, that something sensical would jump out at me and I'd be able to make some sense of it, but I can make no sense of it. Other than the fact that, first of all, I hated these hazing-type activities. I was in the service, and they had a tradition in the military where in the Marine Corps, when you become a non-commissioned officer, you get what's called your blood stripe, and it's a red stripe of cloth that goes down the hem of your slacks on your dress blues. And the tradition is that other non-commissioned officers, when they encounter you on base, they give you a knee to the side of your thigh, right there where that blood stripe is going to go, right? And believe it or not, I actually made it to become promoted to a non-commissioned officer despite my relatively innocuous military career. And I made it clear to everybody that if you knee me in the side of my leg, I'm going to punch you in the mouth. Okay, I don't go in for any of that. Anyway, so there are only a couple of guys who were a lot tougher than me that actually did it. Everybody else left me alone. But anyway, this is that type of hazing type thing here where they... And apparently it's probably just gotten out of hand over the years. And what with the young people these days being third and fourth generation removed from anything godly, they probably just start wailing on each other, and now it's just out of hand. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Pillow fights at the... All right, let's move on into the Justice File because we want to get to the Laquan McDonald... the Laquan McDonald... Well, his death and the ensuing narrative that's been built up around. If you haven't seen the video, let me try to describe it for you. What you have on the video is a young man waving a knife around in front of a half a dozen police cars. Lights going, police with their guns out. I mean, and this guy's just waving the knife around and walking. He slashes a cop car tire. He's just out there. Well, let me just... Breitbart reported that the 2014 shooting of an African-American teen... Doesn't that sound nice? An African-American teen. Let's see. The video from the cruiser of the officer who fired the 16 fatal shots was released. This dash cam video apparently had been... Well, The lawyers for the family had been trying to get this video released for about a year. And for whatever reason, the Chicago Police Department did not release it until just a few weeks ago. Just a few days ago. Well, And I think that was orchestrated by Rahm and everyone else who wanted to manage this crisis. They had the timing figured out. It's going to be a long weekend. We're going to release the video early in the week. We're going to whip up the Black Lives Matter people. We're going to start the narrative that these cops are murdered. We're going to charge this cop with first-degree murder. And we're going to go into this long weekend, and we're just going to see how much we can burn, baby burn. That's what I think. But the weather did not cooperate. The freezing drizzle was something that not even Rahm Emanuel could thwart. And so it all kind of fizzled out. But I have no doubt that Rahm was looking for a crisis to take advantage of. Anyway, I go on and I read this report. The video appears, it appears that the video shows a small knife clenched in the teen's hand. Now, if you've watched the video, it's obvious that there's a knife in his hand. And it's obvious that the fact that there's a huge police presence and police ordering him to stop has no effect on this guy. This is not an African-American teen. This is a knife-wielding maniac, unfazed by a massive police presence, disobeying lawful orders to stop and waving his knife around. And somebody shoots him, thank God. I think it's a completely justified shoot. Now, why did the cop fire 16 shots? That I'm not sure about that. Maybe he had that adrenaline dump you hear about. And he just couldn't stop shooting. And he had 16 rounds in his pistol, and he shot the guy 16 times. So I think this cop probably needs some additional training so that he doesn't waste bullets like that. But I don't think he's guilty of any crime, let alone first-degree murder. It's outrageous. They'll never convict this guy for first-degree murder. It's laughable on its face. But perhaps, by the way, the cop, we got to get his name in here, Van Dyke, Officer Van Dyke. He'll never be convicted of first-degree murder, never in a million years. But perhaps Van Dyke's acquittal a year or two from now, perhaps that will be the next crisis for Rahm and Barry and Soros and that whole cadre. Maybe that'll be the next crisis for them to manage, and maybe they'll get better weather when that crisis occurs. That could be. So there's my opinion on that. Laquan McDonald should have been shot. Probably should have been shot fewer than 16 times, but that's beside the point. Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. We are going to move from Chicago and the freezing drizzle that saved Chicago. We're going to move to Houston. Houston, Texas. This is from the decline and fall of everything file. Fox News reported this past week, November 25th, that a Houston mother and her boyfriend have been charged with four counts of child endangerment The woman's 19-month-old daughter was burned to death inside an oven when she and three of her siblings were left home alone. Raquel Thompson, 25 years old, and Cornell Malone, 21 years old, are in jail. One of Thompson's children, because these two aren't married, of course, one of Raquel Thompson's children, a three-year-old boy, admitted to putting 19-month-old Jazeera Thompson in the oven. That night, the boyfriend and girlfriend left the children alone. They were gone for about 2 hours. When they got home, the oven was tipped over with the oven's door face down on the floor with the baby inside. And the boyfriend uprighted the range and then noticed the baby on the floor, burned and deceased. The oven, according to police, had apparently been turned on all the way. The three children, two three-year-old siblings and a five-year-old, are now in the custody of the Child Protective Services. Police said that the boyfriend is not Jazeera's father, and Raquel Thompson, the mother, is currently 8.5 months pregnant. So what was I going to say about this? A three-year-old admitted to putting a 19-month-old in the oven. I cannot relate to that. I cannot understand how does that happen. This is how civilizations die. I mean, Barry Ho gives us lectures on Thanksgiving, and he talks about our shared values and what makes America, America. But these people were raised and lived in an environment that bears no resemblance to what any of us would think of as America. These are savages raising a generation of even more savage children. It's just shocking, unbelievable, and this is how civilizations fall. These children who were left alone, one of whom put another one in the oven and burned her to death, at some point in the future, these children are going to, they're going to exercise authority over the levers of power. They're going to occupy the institutions. I can't relate to how this could happen. I can't believe it. Just a horrifying story. And it's really kind of hard to read that kind of stuff. And then to go on and try to make fun of someone in the news, it's very difficult. So I don't know that parents understand, young parents, I don't know that they understand the obligation that they're given by God to raise their children and to teach them right from wrong. I think that a generation of parents have abandoned their responsibility to their children. And those children are going to destroy themselves and others and the country and all of it. And it's just very sad. Speaking of parents abandoning their responsibility to their children, we'll go to reason number 1010 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. The bodyguard blanket has been introduced. It's produced by Protect, and it's made from the same materials worn by U.S. soldiers while in battle and is equal to or exceeds the protection used by police departments, according to executives at the Protect company. It's a bulletproof blanket designed for school children. It provides bullet-resistant protection against 90% of all weapons that have been used in school shootings in the U.S., and that's quite a long list. They come in both child and adult sizes. So, reason number 1010, your school district may be considering purchasing bulletproof blankets for the children that you abandon at the government school building every day for no good reason and against the commandment of the living God to raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. There you go. All right. We go now to the Seattle Times, where in Santa Rosa, California, Allie Westover, a 13-year-old girl, told a panel of Boy Scout leaders, she said, quote, "I want to be a Boy Scout. So does my sister Skylar and three of my friends, Ella, Daphne, and Taylor. We all want to be Boy Scouts." And the Boy Scouts have to sit there with a straight face and actually listen to the petition of girls who want to be Boy Scouts. The Seattle Times says, in a year in which gender roles in traditional U.S. institutions have undergone major changes and challenges, a fight over joining the Boy Scouts is among the most recent. These girls, the latest of many over the decades who have sought to become Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, the parents of these girls, obviously these girls don't want to be Boy Scouts. They've been told by their parents they want to be Boy Scouts. And their negligent and possibly criminal parents say that shifting attitudes are on their side. Bathrooms are going unisex. In deference to the transgendered, the Supreme Court has redefined marriage to include homosexuals, and even the Boy Scouts have allowed homosexual scout leaders and all of that. When interviewed, Skyla and Ella and Daphne and Taylor and Allie, they said, "We can do the same things boys can. There's no really girl things or boy things," they said. Anyway, many of you people may not think this is all that serious, but I'm telling you, this is very corrosive to the future of civilization. When boys and girls are corrupted by deviant, perverted adults to deny the bodies that God gave them and the traditional roles that we all know make sense to make a civilization function, when these children are brainwashed, I mean, where does this end? There's no bottom to this, people. And so, once again, that just points out the responsibility that parents have to preserve civilization by raising your children in a proper manner. I guess I don't have to say that again. So we'll move from all of that into the science, really, file. Yeah, the Express in London is reporting that fast radio bursts have left astronomers buzzing with excitement over the possibility of it being a message from aliens. Yes. Yes, they've heard a curious new double blast radio signal accompanied by four single blasts. And this has baffled astronomers. They are analyzing data from the Parkes Radio Telescope in New South Wales, Australia. The discovery, listen to this, folks, the discovery is being compared to the significance, is being compared in significance to the recording of the WOW signal, a strong narrowband radio wave found by Jerry Amon back in 1977. That's how big this is, folks. And we all remember that narrow-banded radio wave found by Jerry Amon back in 1977, we all know what that led to the discovery of. Yes, nothing. It's almost 40 years and nothing. So that is how big this is, folks. The source, according to the Express, remains a total mystery. Seemingly similar readings, which excited astronomers earlier this year. So this happened earlier this year. There were these short bursts of radio waves, and all the astronomers were all a Twitter about it, a flutter in a Twitter, I suppose. They said they were peritons at the time. And they were all excited until they found out that they were coming from microwave ovens on Earth, being prematurely opened in the kitchens of the observatories where the observations were being taken. And they got all excited about that. Nigel Watson, who's the author of the UFO Investigative Manual, he's very excited about all this. Nigel says it would certainly give opportunity for UFO spotters to say, "We told you so, aliens exist, and you should take an interest in our activities, but you didn't believe us," unquote, said Nigel, the author of the UFO Investigations Manual. Nigel, it was mostly because you still lived in your mom's basement at 30 and you always wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons. That was the reason we didn't want to get involved with you. It wasn't the UFO thing. We always found that fairly amusing, but it was the other stuff. All right. Now, I want to do a final story from our good friends over at PETA, People for the Ethical Tasting of Animals. We go to Accomack County, Virginia. WAVI is reporting that the family of a dog euthanized by PETA last year, well, they're now suing the animal rights group for $9 million. Yeah. I know you probably didn't realize that PETA euthanized animals, but listen to this. PETA has admitted that one of its former workers made a tragic mistake by euthanizing the Wilbur Zarate's dog, Maya, without permission. PETA said residents in the area had asked for help with abandoned dogs. And, they went around and started rounding up dogs. And instead of keeping them alive for a reasonable amount of time in case their owners checked on them, PETA just started killing them, just euthanizing dog after dog. And Wilbur Zarate's dog was euthanized. Maya was taken from the home. After Maya was killed by PETA, one of their representatives came to the Zarate's home with a fruit basket and insisted that they were very sorry for not ethically treating their animal, Maya, the Zarate's family dog. So now, the folks at PETA stand to lose, well, who knows how much they'll lose, but I can appreciate the fact that the family is going to sue them for $9 million because hopefully PETA will have to settle for some six-figure amount, which would be nice just to take that much money away from a bunch of deranged, anti-human, socialist, godless pagans, PETA. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of pagans, in my opinion. And in honor of that, obviously, whenever we hear a story that involves PETA, we make it a point, either that day or the following day, to eat at least one extra animal. I hope you'll join me in that. And when you do taste that animal, I hope you will do it ethically. Now, that's it for the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, American Right to Life, Theology Online, my extremely attractive audio engineer, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.